If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mystery, and today we got rid of Jay. You know, I haven't done this in a while. It's been actually quite a long time. Me and Jay used to do a lot of interviews and, you know, moving and all that stuff and getting the homestead ready. We've kind of cut back on that. Today I'm joined by an extremely intelligent gentleman. I was just on his show recently. We met at Squonkapalooza, I think, this year or 2 years ago, as in 2025, or I can't remember now. They all run together. But he runs a really cool show. Check it out on YouTube. It's Cryptid Creatures with Augie Macro. Did I get it?
That's correct. Oh. Yep. Cryptid Creatures with Augie Macro on YouTube.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
It's really great to be here, Mr. E.
I just seen, which we'll talk about him, all the puppets in the background, and I love every one of them. But before we get rocking and rolling, please tell everybody where they go to follow you. And once again, everybody, everything he lists, I'll put in links below. So just click the link, give him a follow, listen to him, have some fun. But go ahead, take it away, Augie.
Well, I am the host and creator of a documentary series on YouTube, Cryptid Creatures with Augie Macro, where I discuss, you know, cryptids, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, and other things of interest. You can find my channel on YouTube, Cryptid Creatures with Augie Macro. We've We haven't done any of the like Patreon or anything yet, so but look out for that in the near to distant future. But Cryptid Creatures with Augie Macro on YouTube.
Awesome. So once again, everybody, make sure you just follow him below, give him a subscription, and watch for all that stuff, because he does some really cool stuff. Really smart guy here. We talked, I think, for like 2.5 or 3 hours on his show. Me and you could talk all night. It's one of those. We're both dinosaur people. And you know how that goes. But I guess that's rock and roll. What got you into wanting to do a like documentary YouTube series about some of these strange and wondrous things we like?
Well, my fascination with cryptids began, I mean, I was always aware of like, you know, the big ones like Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, aliens, things like that. But my first actual interest in it began in second grade. Cause in the school library, there was this book called Tales of the Cryptids. I think it was Mysterious Creatures That May or May Not Exist. I think might've been the subtitle. It was this really interesting book, and it had, because you always hear about the big ones, but you never hear about like some of the lesser known ones. And it made me think there are a lot of these mysterious creatures that people talk about. Like there's gotta be more to it than just, you know, random people saying stuff. Right. So, and a lot of them, they're so interesting. They're design wise and history wise and just everything about them. There's a lot more to it than anyone from the outside would give it credit for. So from there, I explored the subject, and my dad, Clint Macro, has experience with podcasting and things of that nature. And I thought, why don't we do a show about cryptids? So I had been brainstorming the idea for, you know, a few years before, but in 2019, I think. In 2019, the summer of 2019, that was whenever we first started filming. And we were just like, you know what, let's try this out for fun, right? So we're up in the woods of Cameron County, Pennsylvania. It's like north central Pennsylvania, middle of the Appalachians. And we're looking for Bigfoot, right? And I'm much shorter and higher pitched than I am now then. And, you know, I'm looking around, pointing out like broken trees and stuff like that, saying, it's Bigfoot. And then, you know, we released more and more episodes, and eventually we decided to make a serious thing out of it. It was our third episode, Mothman, the History and the Mystery, season 1, episode 3, where we actually started getting into it as like, huh, this is something that we could do something with. And you know, the rest is history.
That's awesome. What was I going to ask? Man, my brain's all over the place already. But yeah, that's really cool. I mean, getting out and doing it, that's something we don't really do. So that's really neat. And then
we try and do, you know, lots of on location things.
Yeah.
Obviously we try and interview, but, for anyone that hasn't seen it, think like you remember In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy that kind of, a little bit of Rod Serling thrown in, you know, something kind of like that. It's family friendly, but it's still, you know, and it we don't take ourselves very seriously, but we still can explore the subject seriously and you know, with rigor.
That's awesome. So how did the puppets come into it?
Well, for those who are unaware, on each of the episodes, I'm very artistically inclined, so I make lots of things. So just for the fun of it, I started making puppets, for each of the, cryptids that we discuss. So the second episode, Nessie or not, we talked about the Loch Ness Monster. I made a little hand puppet of Nessie, and then from there it grew. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure why we started doing it. It's just, I enjoy it, and it's a fun gimmick.
They're awesome, by the way, everybody at home. Watch the videos. If you go to a festival where he's at, check him out, because They are awesome. I think the first physical one I seen from you, I think, was the Squonk. And then I went back. The Squonk is amazingly made. It is like scarily ugly cute, which is a squonk, right? I mean, you nailed it. That's what the Squonk is. I try to buy it off you like four times for my wife, because that's her favorite thing. And it looks like what I think the Squonk should look like, but it's like expertly done. The teeth bother me in a good way, because it looks like it has like some people teeth with its tusk. Where do the teeth come from?
This whole thing, it's definitely my most robust puppet so far. It functions as a stuffed animal and as a puppet, kind of, because he's chunky. But the teeth were... Are you familiar with Friendly Plastic?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so it's this crafting material. It's these little plastic beads, and you can put them in water and put them in the microwave for like a minute, and then you can... They're like the, in the, it's like this putty stuff that'll dry or cool off and harden. So that's what the teeth are. And then I painted them.
All right, they look really good, because I thought they were people teeth at first. I thought you stole them.
Nope.
No, it's great. And I think I see the lizard man behind you. Is that Nessie beside him, kind of tucked in there?
This here is we got lizard person, Loch Ness Monster's a little bit above him. There's the Wendigo.
Oh, that's the Wendigo. Yes.
Yeah. Flatwoods Monster, Mothman. There's a Jersey Devil here. There's Krampus way up there. Goatman, Thunderbird, Dogman, Ogopogo, Bigfoot, and Hodag.
I love them all.
There are others on that wall, and that wall, the atmospheric jellyfish is on that wall.
Which, if you watch the video I did with Augie, you'll see him in the background.
Yeah, we still need to do the last bit of filming and editing for that episode, but we'll get that episode out in the next 2 weeks.
There you go. This doesn't come out for, I think, 3 weeks. So it probably, by the time this comes out, it may either be out or will soon be out. And if it's already out, I'll link it below too. But yeah, I mean, they're great. They're great. I don't know how the Hodag guys didn't steal the Hodag.
Well,
did they try?
He is the only puppet where there's two of them. They really, really, really wanted a Hodag puppet for the Hodag store. So I actually made a second Hodag. He has a twin brother that is currently residing in Rhinelander. I think they named him Huey.
That's awesome. Yeah. Huey the Hodag.
Yeah, they bring him to festivals and stuff. And
I think I seen it at, was it Crypticon? At a festival later in the year, last year. I didn't realize it was one of yours. That's awesome, though. I mean, the Hodag guys are great. If anybody, check out Rhinelander. If it wasn't so far away, we'd go. But the Hodag, I mean, all the puppets are amazing.
We made an episode about the Hodag, season one, episode 10, The Hodag of Horror. And, yeah. It was part of this summer trip. We like to do big road trips, and we'll film for like 10 episodes on a road trip. And the one that we did, we did this whole thing around the Great Lakes. So we went up through Michigan, we filmed for the Dogman and went up the Upper Peninsula and did some stuff. And our prime objective was Rhinelander. We spent a whole day in Rhinelander. We visited the Hodag store. We actually went to Eugene Shepherd's grave site. I've never seen that before. That's something that we like to do. We like to like go to the grave of the person that's involved. I don't see that very often. We went to, you know, the Chamber of Commerce and actually we did a little segment in that episode about the Rhinelopus.
The Rhinelopus.
Yeah. So it's this other local legend. It's from this small town, like 15 miles outside of Rhinelander. And so the name is like a combination of rhinoceros, elephant, and octopus. It's like this really weird, gnarly green thing. It's also called the Venus Lake Monster, because there's this little lake, Venus Lake, right next to the town. The name of the town escapes me right now. But it's really just this big gnarly tree, like the trunk of a tree, and this guy painted it and sculpted it a little
bit. I've seen that. Did you show me that last year?
Maybe.
I think you may have showed me a picture of it, because that is the only way. It's like a giant tree upside down. It's painted green, all that.
It's in a big cage.
Yes. I think you showed me. That thing is wicked. Yeah, I wish. So we do our own little Bigfoot festival here in our town, and I so desperately want to make it like a thing like that, like the Cornfoot or something like that, because I'm from North. Anybody listening to this, I don't already know, we're from Northwest Ohio. Well, I am from Northwest Ohio. We're in the corn, like, it's corn for the next, if you drive straight west, you will be in corn for 14 hours. So we like playing that up. But that thing is wicked. So out of doing these, what has been, I guess I got two questions for you. What has been the easiest documentary you've done? And what has been the hardest documentary you've done?
Easiest. I don't know. I mean, because it depends.
Mm-hmm.
Like with, you know, the second episode of the show where it's still like, it's still kind of this rinky dink thing. And because we're talking about, you know, the Loch Ness Monster, we can't actually go to oceans. My dad has a friend, he's an epidemiologist, but he is Scottish. He grew up in Scotland. He lives in New Jersey right now. But he came on the show because he was the closest thing to a Nessie expert that I knew. Shout out to Grant Gallagher. That's his name. that was fun. But things like that were just, we can't really get to the place. You know, it's that makes it a little easier in terms of like getting there, but it makes things a little more difficult in other ways, you know, because we like the production value of actually being there.
Yeah.
I will say, though, the hardest one by far was the Grand Tour, the Cryptids, Creatures, and Curiosities of the Keystone State. It's not one of our episodes. It is a feature-length program where we travel across the state of Pennsylvania exploring cryptids and folklore and urban legends and historical sites and haunted places and just weird things to see. Right, just interesting places. You know, we have a lot of places from, we, for anyone who doesn't know, I am from the Pittsburgh area, southwestern Pennsylvania. So we have a lot of stuff in Pittsburgh. My dad grew up in north central Pennsylvania. So we have a lot of stuff up in Cameron County and stuff. That was really, really fun to do, but it took like 2 years to do the whole thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, we put a lot of driving hours on over the course of that. Most of the stuff that we filmed for that was over the course of a whole summer. My dad travels a lot for work, so I was able to, you know, hop along with him and film a few things at a time, you know. We always, there's this festival, the Cinema Hunting Snake Hunt, up in Cameron County. We always go to, it's around my birthday. We always go up to it every year. So that year, as well as doing that, we hit like 12 different spots for different creatures on the way and on the way back. That was, I'm very proud of that. That
sounds like quite the undertaking.
Not only was it a lot to actually film, but there was so much. My dad, I can't thank him enough for what he does. He's the you know, the filmer, the editor, the sound guy, the post production. You know, he's doing everything behind the scenes while I'm yapping on the camera. So that was a long time spent editing and, like, you know, fixing the sound and putting graphics in and putting music in, and like it was an ordeal, but I'm very proud of it. It was kind of inspired by, there's this show on WQED. It's called the Pittsburgh History Series.
Okay.
It's It's a really neat documentary about the Pittsburgh area. It's you can watch it on PBS, actually. They have it streaming on PBS. But there was this one documentary or one episode on that show. It was called The Pennsylvania Road Show. And they just kind of bounced around the state and looked at some different places of interest in Pennsylvania. And that was the inspiration for it. I always liked the Pittsburgh History Series, and Rick Seeback, he's the host of it. He has a really good, presence. And I thought, why couldn't you do that with cryptids? You know? So it started out, it was just going to be like an episode, but we had so much stuff. We had to make it into a movie. So, and that is also available on our channel. The Grand Tour, the Cryptids, Creatures, and Curiosities of the Keystone State on awesome. YouTube channel. Yes.
What are some of the cryptids from that? You don't got to go into any detail, but I'm just curious.
See, a lot of the... Pennsylvania is one of the most paranormal, most cryptid-infested states, but a lot of them aren't really talked about as much, you know, because you got, like, the Squonk is probably the biggest, but mm-hmm. even then, he's not... You know, he's not like the Jersey Devil or Mothman yeah. or something, like a very distinctly that state thing, but not as well known. But you know, there's this kind of a dogman sort of creature from Clinton County called the Gee Woggle. There's tons of ghosts and things like that. There's the Kecksburg UFO, which crash landed outside of the tiny town of Kecksburg in Westmoreland County on December 9th, 1965. And the following day was carried away by the government, probably to Wright-Patterson.
Right down the road from me.
Yeah. I've been wanting to go there for a while. So.
It is interesting. We've actually had some truckers on the show that delivered stuff to Wright-Pat. And some people have claimed... It gets like 100 trucks a day, right? Or not, that's an exaggeration, but, you know, dozens of trucks, though, with deliveries sometimes coming a day. And every once in a while, there's a truck elevator, like a semi-elevator, to take it to the lower level. That's not secret. That's not like a conspiracy. That exists. Because there's so much stuff underground, they'll pull a semi into like a bay
yeah.
and drop it down into the ground. So you never can see what's happening down there. And we've had truck driver buddies that have said, like, yeah, we were sitting there within the delivery line and we watched a semi just disappear underground. I mean, that's impressive. I mean, to make a whole, like, that's a big elevator. Uh-huh. But yeah, you should definitely do one on Wright Pat. It is freaky being around it. Some of the base you can walk on, but you can see, like, where the, for Project Blue Book, like, where the office was and everything like that.
Yeah.
That would be a good one for you.
It's just more of a matter of getting out there.
Yeah, like, no, it's a drive.
I've got 80 episodes worth of material I'd like to do, but mm-hmm. it's just getting to the place and like having it not conflict with school and work and you know, whatever else.
Yeah. So you said the Dogman, the Kecksburg, which Kecksburg's really cool. For anybody, we did an episode on that like in season 2 or something like that, but.
Kecksburg, I think, is the one location we've been to the most.
Yeah.
Because we filmed there in season 1, episode 4, Are We Alone? We filmed there for, I think it's season 1, episode 11, the festival special. Because we did the festival special was like, we went to, you know, there were like 5 different festivals that we featured, like cryptid festivals. So like there was the Forest County Bigfoot Festival, which is a smaller thing up in northern Pennsylvania. We went to Mothman. We went to the Flatwoods Monster Convention. That was its first year, actually. We did Monster Fest in Canton. And then we had Squonkapalooza on there, actually. And then we had the Kecksburg UFO Festival as well. And then... We talked about the Men in Black there for season 2, episode 3, The Return of the Mothman. I just wanted another place to shoot at. I didn't feel like, you know, being in my in the set. So and you know, Men in Black were reported alongside the so we decided to go there. And then we featured it in the Grand Tour, because that's another big Pennsylvania thing. So yeah, that one, that's definitely a favorite site of ours.
What did you think it was, the Kecksburg UFO?
Well, I don't know. I mean, a lot of it's a lot of it isn't so much me formulating my own opinion. It's just, you know, finding all of them interesting. Now, I absolutely think that stuff has crashed and the government has hidden it, mm-hmm. and can't convince me otherwise that the B-2 stealth bomber is of reverse engineered alien technology. And yeah, I mean, the Venera explanation for the Kecksburg UFO, that it's that it was actually the one of the Venera space probes, like one of the Soviet space probes, yeah. that was on the Venus but then crashed, that actually makes a lot of sense to me, because it, like, the timeline fits, and you know, all of, like, all of the circumstances about it makes sense.
I wonder, because I remember around the edge, because it was described like an egg corn, kind of, but around that rim where they said about the pictographs, now I wonder if it was just Russian.
Yeah, like, I mean, what do you expect, you know, 60s era people from, you know, tiny town Pennsylvania?
I mean, I wouldn't, it would be like looking, for me, I mean, I don't know any other languages, so yeah. It might as well be alien, you know, when I'm looking at it. I don't know what it says. Just looks like things, you know. But I can get behind that being a crashed Soviet probe, or even a U.S. probe, or anything like that. I mean, because we were
the Der Glocke explanation, yeah. too, where the Nazi anti-gravity aircraft design that U.S. would have repurposed whenever they took all of the Nazi scientists. That makes sense too. That, like, because that the design of, or the Der Glocke, excuse me, that. Just the you know, the designs of those ships are very, very, very similar.
They, I mean, they look very, yeah. If you see pictures, that was one I did a school report on, the Bell Der Glocke. It does, you're right. It looks, I mean, it's like the same shape.
Yeah.
Like the same thing. So that would be interesting, having the creature that they thought was inside, it was actually just an American pilot that's like just got scrambled because he crashed into the side of a Pennsylvania mountain. Gosh. What about Braxy? What do you think about Braxy?
I mean, she's a favorite of mine whenever it comes to, like, the cryptid herself.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, just, I mean, even like, because I, again, I'm very artistic, so the design of things appeals to me, and like, she's very distinctly feminine. You know, mm-hmm. That's not very common outside of mythology. You know, usually people call the things he.
Her head turns?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I know everybody at home can't see this. It is amazing.
Yeah, you can see this puppet. I'm currently holding the Flatwoods Monster puppet, for people who can't see. and she's in, I've talked about the Flatwoods Monster in a few different episodes, but the puppet first appears in season 1, episode 12. I think it's 12. The Monster of Braxton County. That we wanted to give Braxy her own episode, because we had visited the Flatwoods Monster Museum and talked to Andrew there, for what it was, episode 5 of season 1, the museum special. We visited a ton of cryptid museums. We went to, you know, Expedition Bigfoot, Sasquatch Museum in Georgia. We went to the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland. It's now actually, they're moving locations to Bangor. I learned about that recently. They were originally in Portland. We went to the Mothman Museum, obviously. I'm forgetting one. I think I'm forgetting one, but and then the Flatwoods Monster Museum.
So do you think she was an alien? Do you think she was a drone? I've heard all kinds of theories.
I mean, it's just hard to say, because it was like 1.5 reports.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a whole lot of material to go off of. Yeah, I haven't really formulated an actual opinion about what she is. I don't know.
She's one of our show's favorites. So I love the really scary cryptid things that do nothing. Like Braxy was just there. Like you said, there's like three reports where it's the main one with the kids and the mom. Then there was like campers on the side of a hill that seen her, and then the car one. And she didn't attack anybody. I mean, yeah, she smelled nauseous, they said, and everything like that. But that's not like she didn't grab somebody and shake them or try to eat him or nothing like that. Same with like the Grafton Monster. That's one of our show's favorites. Because he just existed. The original guy that seen him on the side of the road, worked for the newspaper, absolutely regretted telling anybody about it because the manhunt that happened immediately after. Because he didn't do anything. He was just sitting there whistling. And, you know, now there's 400 hicks out here with shotguns trying to shoot him. But that's right. I love Braxy. Like, and the distinctly feminine, it's just like collectively the whole society has just been like, yeah, Braxy's a woman. She's got a dress with pockets. That's my favorite. We got that little cartoon where she meets the Fresno Nightcrawlers and like, oh, we like your dress. And she's like, thanks, it's got pockets. Oh, gosh. I think that one was in, it was in Fallout, right? Fallout 76, yeah. Braxy was. It was one of the aliens from that universe in a suit. Yeah. Have you done the Snally either?
I think it's season one. It's either episode 7 or episode 8. I get those mixed up. It's either episode 7 or episode 8. Here Be Dragons is the name of it. So we discussed some dragon myths, and we discussed the Snally on that one. We visited Sarah Cooper in Maryland and with her about the, you know, the Snally Gaster and the Snally Gaster Museum. We have talked about the Snally.
That's awesome. For anybody who don't know, it's Teddy Roosevelt left the campaign trail to go fight it with his hyena Bill. That's a real thing. Like it's insane to me that you could say that sentence. A U.S. president left the campaigning trail with his pet hyena to hunt a dragon. Yes. Now I love this, Snally. What is a documentary? Let's say money wasn't an object. Let's say danger. What, like, you could go do this. What would be one that you would absolutely love to go do? Anywhere in the world.
I'm not good at picking favorites or ones of things because I can make arguments for a lot of things. I don't know. There's so much.
The world's a crazy place.
I mean, if danger's no object, then, you know, like, cracking the whole UFO conspiracy would be something. I don't know if that really counts, but, like, actually walk into Area 51, you know, that would be something.
There you go. Like, just being able to just see you walking through with your dad filming as you're walking past the gates, not getting shot.
Not getting shot at by people in white Jeeps.
Area 51 would be a good one. That would be a really good. I didn't even think about Area 51.
Just something like that. Because, I mean, you know, anywhere in the world, if money is no object, then, you know, that's one thing. But, like, you know, I don't know how well you'd be able to pay someone off to get into somewhere as secure as that.
There's a number.
Well, that's
true. A big number. I'm not saying it ain't. There's a lot of zeros on that check, but
it's Lockheed Martin numbers. But
that's how you do it. You become the CEO of Lockheed Martin or Skunk Works, or BlackRock, and then you get to go right in there. Your office is actually on the second floor underground. Oh gosh,
above where the lizard people have lunch
with the grays eating people. Yeah. We did that in the Dolce base. That's how that was described. Yeah, Area 51 is a good one. I would love to do. We're doing an extended series right now on the jungle walruses of the Congo, and
the Dinganak.
Yes, the Dinganak. But the Congo, I mean, Mokelly and Bembe and Kongamotos and the Dinganak, like, Monster Quest found, like, a Mulling, oh, supposedly Mokelly and Bembe den. And they had a camera that just wasn't long enough. It just wasn't long enough to get all the way back in this tunnel. And I really think the Congonese cryptids could easily be discovered if the Congo wasn't such a horrid war zone right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Our buddies Lyle Blackburn, we were talking to him about it. Like, he was going to go to the Congo for Mokelly and Bembe, and they're just like, nope. Because they basically said he wasn't going to come back.
Yeah.
Like, he's, you know, you got kids or a family or whatever. Like, if danger wasn't an option, I'd be in the Congo. We were just talking to, like, oh gosh, there was an explorer. You know what Kongamotos are, right? Yeah. Yeah. So for everybody at home, they're basically either giant red bats or like pterosaurs or anything like that, but they're extremely aggressive. They're basically flying like piranhas. And there was a guy looking for Mokelly and Bembe and ran into those. And so you can run into different cryptids looking for other cryptids.
They are that dense there that you can accidentally discover the wrong cryptid.
Well, yeah, they were trying to eat him, so they discovered him.
Yeah, there are so many in the Congo. That's true. See, I'm conflicted with what they would be if they exist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's they didn't survive the extinction event. It's not that. I always find the idea of like the temporal fissure opening up and letting stuff in and out from different eras to a universally applicable concept, because a lot of these things could very easily just be misinterpretations of extinct species or whatever else, you know, not just from the past even. But, you know, or it's like, you know, giant turtles that have grown to immense sizes and have, you know, hidden themselves away from civilization or something. I don't know.
I can be with any of it. I'm with you. I really do think there are, like, I don't know the best word for it, time portals or anything like that, or these energy zones where things just come in and out. I mean, there are so many depictions. We did a Native American story, the Partridge Creek Beast, from 1800s. They drew a Eutyrannus, a feathered theropod, way, way, way before we knew what theropods really looked like and knew that Eutyrannus was covered in feathers. And they're like, yeah, this thing dragged an elk back into this cave. Like, what? He's just draw these, you know, these moose hunters in Alaska or in Canada are the draw. And then there was a big, big sauropod seen by a Native American group in northern Canada up by, I think, Great Slave Lake, that would be the Slavey Indians, or Native Americans, where they drew it. I mean, this was like 18 or 19, like 10s or 12, something like that. And they drew like how a kid would draw like a Jurassic Park brontosaurus. And they said it came out of the mountain and it was walking around and it made some really loud calls and it got in the lake and swam away. They only seen it one time. Like, it just was it, you know. It's so I kind of fall into that idea with some of these things being one-off time slips. And now you get a brontosaurus or a Eutyrannus came through. Or like you said, something from the future even.
Yeah, because a lot of them are just, they're strange. And like, there's nothing in the fossil record that can explain them that we know of, at least that we know. So, you know, for all we know, it's not just from the past. There's this show. It was in the like 2000s.
Primeval.
Yeah, that's a favorite of mine.
And I think that's kind of, I kind of get with that theory for some of these things, where it was, what was it, the bats, right? That was the Predator X from the future, was a bat relative. But yeah, I mean, like a Mosasaur, you know, an Arthropleura comes through. And like we talked about, one of our first talks we ever did was on the, the first one we ever did was the Arkansas Giant Killer Centipede, which did not hurt anybody that did not attack it first. like the kids it bit were beating it with a stick, and the guy it attacked shot it. So I'm just putting that out there. Is a lot of these really scary cryptids. That's the story a lot of times. But basically, it was like described as a giant arthropleura. You know, it was 10 feet long, huge, and it was scavenging most of the time. Which is arthropleura, as anybody doesn't know, is an 8 to 10 foot long millipede centipede ancestor. It was not either. It was before they really split off. So a lot of depictions describe it as a herbivore, but that may not be very true, because it was both. You know, millipedes, modern day millipedes, are decomposers and herbivores. Modern day centipedes are either scavengers or active predators. And this was an ancestor to both, so it would make sense that it may have been a little bit of everything. You know, where
arthropleura was in earlier renditions, like Walking with Dinosaurs or Walking with Monsters, in that case, renditions, it would be, it would eat dead wood and moss and stuff like that. But for something that large, I would have to think that it would need some sort of protein more constantly.
And especially
since it's an arthropod, like they don't get that big. So it would probably dine on both.
I mean, that is a lot of calcium for that exoskeleton to make.
Yeah.
Like that is a lot. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it would pass up a free meal. So a lot of the encounters with the Arkansas giant killer centipede were around dead animals / roadkill. And where the animal didn't kill it itself, but it was actively taking advantage of a free meal. It's a free meal. Why not? Then it would defend itself, like the big one where it rised up at the bow hunter because it was trying to look intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And once he backed away, it grabbed the deer and kept backing away into a hole. Mm. Never wanted to fight, never wanted to do anything. But yeah, I think time slips. Now that we're on this idea, what do you think would be the scariest, meaning really like prehistoric life, what do you think would be one of the scariest things to come through a time portal? You're in the woods, the primeval time portal opens up. What comes through that you're like, that'd be the worst thing?
It depends. I love primeval, but its renditions of things are way too aggressive.
Very. I mean, they're monsters. Yeah, everything that comes through that hole is a monster.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate, this thing is freaked the heck out, so it's probably not all that excited about interacting with creatures that it doesn't know exists. It's hard to say, because there are some creatures that are just, they're just stupidly large, you know, whether that be predators or not. I can't imagine coming face to face with like Giganotosaurus or T-Rex or something like that would be all that exciting, or not exciting, all that friendly. But at the same time, there's more subtle things. Like, would it be freakier to come face to face with a Spinosaurus or catch something off the Spinosaurus you don't have a vaccine for, because the disease hasn't existed for 100 million years, that sort of thing. I think it's those more subtle things, because a lot of the bigger things are probably more manageable than we would give them credit for,
But you can hide from a theropod, like,
yeah,
a big one, a T-Rex could burst through the house, but
yeah,
like, if you're in a building, you're gonna know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh, I think,
and like, really most of those creatures, there's whenever you think about them as realistic animals, there's no reason for them to go after you, unless they are truly and honestly that desperate for food, which it's pretty unlikely. That would probably just scavenge first. Like, that's usually what big animals do whenever they're in an unfamiliar habitat. They're not lashing out at things. They're trying to be low key and
don't you realize the time portal makes them crazy?
It's the electromagnetic field of the portal. Yeah,
it fries their brain.
Definitely,
I think it's short-faced bear for me personally, because they were so actively hunting humans. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a couple cave systems that we found short-faced bear dens preserved in, where it's just crushed human skulls.
Yeah,
like they liked eating us.
Yeah, no, that's something too, because a more recent animal would know what a human is, even if they have clothes on. They wouldn't know what a human is.
Yeah, they're like, I know that smell. And these ones smell a lot fatter than the ones I'm used to.
Yeah, these guys aren't carrying spears, and they're at least twice as heavy.
Mm-hmm.
these guys might be easy pickings.
That'd be like going from a wild turkey to a domestic turkey.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's a big bird.
Yeah.
But yeah, something that can get to you, like you said, like Giganotosaurus or T-Rex or something would be absolutely terrifying, but they're huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a 40-foot long, 20-foot tall animal.
And honestly, with how large they are, I'm not saying everyone, because you'd have to be pretty fit to do this, but you might be able to, like, outrun them.
Right.
With how large they are.
We may be small enough not to be worth the effort.
Exactly, yeah. And in their time, you can think about this too, in their time, the smell of mammal means something the size of a rat.
Yeah, rat, a squirrel thing.
Especially with those really large apex predators, they're not focusing as much on sight. Now, T-Rex has really good eyesight, like T-Rex, mm-hmm. based on the shape of the eye sockets and the way that connects to the brain case and stuff. Like, it's they would have had excellent eyesight, but those types of big predators would have primarily been focusing on smell. So
T-Rex's olfactory chamber is like the size of me.
Yeah. So like if you take something from a time where mammals were no bigger than like a cat, like the largest thing is the size of a cat, they're not going to be going after things that smell like mammals. They're going to be looking for things that smell like their prey, at least at first. They'll probably figure it out.
When you get hungry, you get hungry.
Yeah.
But the only thing I could think for against that, sorry everybody, we're nerds, that's just what it is, is that if they're nest raiders or mammals,
yeah,
and then seek us out to destroy us. But no, yeah, I'm with you that I would love to see like a Dreadnoticus, an Argentinosaurus, like 110 feet for everybody. I've talked about it on the show a lot, but like Supersumosaurus, Dreadnoticus, Argentinosaurus. 80 to 100 feet tall by some estimates. Our grain elevators around here are 100 feet tall. And I couldn't imagine a herd of 100 individuals that are 100 feet tall and, you know, 200 tons walking around.
Yeah, you gotta imagine how lush that world had to have been, though. Because, like, you got a Dreadnoughtus or a Patagotitan or an Argentinosaurus or something that stupidly, absurdly large on four legs walking around eating plants. You need, like, a Central Park's worth of food a day to supply something like that. You know, especially because they're herd animals. Like, they could scour a continent in months, right? So just imagine, like, oxygen levels were higher. It was so much warmer. Because that's another thing, too, that would impact a creature, like, if they were going to, you know, dun-dun-dun-dun into our world, right? Like, would they be able to sustain themselves even? Because not only are the huge herbivores low on food in our world, especially digestible food, because a lot of the plants that exist now didn't exist prevalently in their time, especially flowering plants for like the Jurassic giants. But the predators too are used to that big of food. So, you know, like...
Yeah, they're used to fighting building-sized animals.
Yeah, like would a pack of allosaurs be able to, get used to the fact that they're not going to have Diplodocus to chase after, right? Or something like that.
Let's do it. I just want to bring them all back. I would be this. I won't tell
anybody.
They've
made 7 movies about how that's a bad idea.
I don't care. I'm fine with it. But yeah, if I ever win the lottery, I won't tell anybody, but there'll be signs. And the first one would be an Argentinosaurus in the front yard. Like, yeah, I just... He gets 470 bales of hay a day. That's I get 2 semi truckloads a day for him.
Yeah.
So let's see. I guess what is a cryptid? Because we're almost out of time for tonight. But what is a cryptid that you think, or a cryptid creature, or you know these paranormal entities? Because we've talked on our show for everybody at home. You know, there's a couple things that kind of. The modern day definition of cryptid is not the biological term of cryptid that Ivan T. Sanderson and Bernard Hubelman kind of founded it to mean now. You know, now we have it where like the dog man is more of a probably a paranormal entity not, you know, at least from some of the stories we've had and encountered with and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Not a true flesh and blood, you know, amalgam. It's more of an amalgamation of things. But what's one of the what one freaks you out the most? What one would you not want to run into?
Well, I mean, there are some pretty nasty ones. See, the problem is, like, horror doesn't really get me. So I find it more fascinating than you know, freaky. But I mean, in a real life scenario, that'd be different. I don't know, because, like, Wendigo, I love the Wendigo, but yeah, like, yeah, no, I'm not gonna do well against a Wendigo.
That's mine. Know? That's always mine, is because I ice fish a lot, and I go up to the UP and stuff like that.
Yeah,
where, like, that stuff, like, where Algonquins were. And they were talking about these things. And I almost got frostbite. This literally this last weekend before recording this. We were ice fishing, and I almost got frostbite for the first time. And I've been really cold. It was only like negative 12 or 13 where we were. I've been to negative like 35 where a chunk of my hair froze off. And you are just out there by yourself. Like, I've been in forest out there going to ice fish where a mammoth could be 20 feet away from you in this woods. And you would never know. It is so dense. And then hearing something say your name or, you know, something like that would be the absolute worst thing. Because you're out, you're by yourself. It's cold. It's horrible. I've been in two blizzards up there ice fishing. The one we got lost on the lake. We could not find the shore. And that was horrible. Because it was a whiteout and we're driving on four-wheelers trying to find out where we're going, and when you can't see landmarks and your phone doesn't work, you're like, it's basically being in a white desert.
Yeah.
You know, being 8 or 9 miles out on a lake and the snow, that was horrible. And then you imagine just hearing something like, okay, you know, a whisper trying to lure you deeper. That would be like, yeah. And then the tortured spirit aspect with the Algonquins talking about it, that it is a creature of taboo and gluttony and rage and violence. And there's no reasoning. That's all melted away. When skinwalkers are, you know, still shamanistic people, there's still a brain in there. That, like, you know, Wendigo behind you is, like, I think, a perfect example. It just, teeth and rage. I mean, that's what they are. You know, just thin, gaunt, skeletal monsters. Where did you go?
They're things of psychological, supernatural, and physical terror.
Gosh, yeah, that thing, if you just, that came out of the snow at you, I mean, it's just over.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Gosh. What documentary was he from? Where'd you guys go for that?
Well, we did, okay, so he's season 2, episode 1, A Man Eating Madness. I called it that because that was something pretty much everything that I do is improv. I don't do scripts all that often, which surprises me sometimes. But we were on location. It was part of that Great Lakes trip.
Okay.
So we went to Jay Cook State Forest, in it was outside of Duluth in Minnesota. I wanted to go to, like, Voyager or, you know, like Lake Wendigo or something like that, but that was way too far into Minnesota for our capacity. Yeah. That would have been really cool though. But the place is really neat. Like, you can see it in the episode. It's like really nice craggy rocks on the river, and it's a really scenic place. But I was there talking about the Wendigo, and I said, "A man eating madness." It was one of the things I said, and my dad laughed and had to go. He had to go walk off from the camera so I wouldn't laugh and you wouldn't hear him. That's happened more than once. I have a catchphrase, "We may never know." I'll pose at the end of what I'm saying, I'll pose a question and say, "We may never know." And the first time, or the second time I said that, it was in the Alien episode, the fourth episode. My dad had to leave. He had to go sit in the car and just wait. Yeah. It's fun whenever that happens. But anyway, the second location on that that Wendigo segment of the Great Lakes trip, we went to Wendigo Lake in Wisconsin. I forget exactly where in Wisconsin. It's like east central north-ish. It was between there and Rhinelander. It's not directly related to the Wendigo, but there was like an Ojibwe warrior that fought there and like ate the heart of one of the guys he killed, and after that he was known as Wendigo. That was one of his names. And like the lake has like we went to the beach of the lake, and like the water's red from the mercury in it.
Oh really?
Yeah. There's signs and stuff everywhere, like don't swim in the water because you'll get mercury poisoning, right? So that's because there have been some sightings of the Wendigo around it. So some people think that it might not have been the Wendigo. It might have just been the fact that everyone was hallucinating from the mercury poisoning. Yeah.
They all got Mad Hatter's disease.
The water was literally like this like vermilion red color. And there were fish in it. The fish didn't care. But yeah, it's like that's not swimming water.
Gosh. I think it wasn't. Yeah, Mad Hatter's disease was mercury.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, it's not good.
They would treat the hide that they used to make the hats, or the beaver that they used to make the hats with mercury.
Gosh.
We're soon to release a second Wendigo episode. If the audience is familiar with Jason Hewlett, he's worked with Small Town Monsters a few times. He did Cursed Waters, their Ogopogo thing. For our Ogopogo episode, it was season 2, episode 5, The Spirit of Lake Okanagan. We interviewed Jason Hewlett and then Eli Watson, because they both created the documentary, and then Jason Hewlett wrote his book about the Ogopogo that went along with it. We met them at Monster Fest, and I got back in touch with them, and we did interviews with them, and then we did an Ogopogo episode. So he just recently, Jason, just recently released a book, Heart of Ice, Tracking the Wendigo. And then he released a documentary on YouTube, Tracking the Wendigo, where he was doing investigations in Canada, in Alberta, about the Wendigo. It's really interesting. You can find that documentary on YouTube as well. I think Small Town Monsters released that one on YouTube.
Awesome.
It's not a Small Town Monsters documentary, but I think they pushed it.
They were associated, partially associated with it or whatever.
Yeah, but we were watching that. I've been wanting to do another Wendigo episode because I feel like there's more to talk about. I kind of covered the basic story fairly well in the first episode, but I wanted to do more because I like the Wendigo. And I was trying to figure out how to do that, like how to justify that. And then I saw the documentary. I was like, I'm going to get back in touch with Jason. We got to do this. So It was the same week I talked to you actually about atmospheric creatures in your book. It was that same week I interviewed Jason, and
awesome.
He's very, very like cogent and like tight with his interviews, because he said that he's been talking about it so much he like knows what to say even without the questions. Yeah, it was pretty good. So that'll be released at some point, like a few weeks after the atmospheric creatures episode. It'll be awesome. The first episode of season 3.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you for coming on. Please go back through and give your shout outs and where people can, where you want to send people and everybody again at home. I'll put all the links down below, but go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. E, for having me on Cryptids of the Corn. I really appreciate it. I'd like to come back on at some point in the future if you're into that. You can find me on my YouTube channel, Cryptid Creatures with Augie Macro, AugieMacro. You can find all of the episodes. You can find that feature-length documentary, Grand Tour. Like, subscribe, and tell your friends is always how I end my episodes. So check out my show, and again, thank you for having me on.
I'm excited. We'll have you back on. We got to get Jay in here because he hates dinosaurs. He hates all that stuff. He doesn't believe in them. So it's really fun when there's at least two people that are really into it and he's not. But everybody, if you can, do me a favor. When you go and comment on his stuff, say that you're from Cryptids of the Corn You know, go share him some love. Augie, how we end it here when we have a guest on is I'll count down backwards from three and we'll yell bye and we'll hit in the outro. We'll play out. You ready?
Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Bye.
Hey guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the Jade Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.